Most of you know we've been preaching through the book of Hebrews for a long time. It looks like we're about to finish it. And in 1980, God willing, Sunday night we'll turn into Romans verse by verse. I don't really know how many messages we've taught on Hebrews, but we turned Sunday night into a classroom. And we're in the 13th chapter. I don't really need an excuse to do what I'm doing, but I'm going to leap out of the book of Hebrews into the Old Testament. If I had a linkage, it'd be that 8th verse of the 13th chapter, which is a verse from Hebrews that every Christian that's been long in the way at all comes to memorize. Jesus Christ the same, yesterday and today and forever. The Greek has it, no qualities of which shall change in any manner at all. Always the same. But I'm just going to use that as a jumping off place tonight and go back into the book of Psalms tonight and take some moments to try to say what doesn't really need to be said as much to our home audience as to those who watch on syndication. They hear us teach every Sunday night. They have no part in the battles that keeps this network alive. They have the joy of listening to God's Word being poured out, and except for hearing us take an offering as part of the regular service, they never feel any pressure of any kind to give. While here on the home network, we carry it in struggle and battle every night. They pick up cryptic little phrases and messages that lets them know we're in a battle. They may listen to 2020 or some other news contest, contest is the right word for it, some other news commentary, and they'll hear Scott or Faith Center mentioned, or in the recent AP release. They read dated material. It goes back to the days we were fighting the Attorney General, and I don't know when the world's going to figure out we put him in a cage temporarily as far as we're concerned. And the Attorney General signed a stipulated agreement with this church that based upon the evidence before him, there was no further reason to investigate Gene Scott, Faith Center, or any other institution that we're involved in. Yet I'm getting mail to me every week from all over the nation. Continued reprintings of the Associated Press article. I like the quote that's in part of them because it has an attorney who no longer works for Faith Center saying that if a government agent came to the church, we'd take the paper towels out of the restroom before we had let him see any of the papers of this church. But the facts are that battle is pretty much behind us, except for a landmark Supreme Court confrontation, which will affect every church in the days ahead. And I felt on this bridge between the years and the holiday season, I've got my connection to Hebrews. I said, if I need it, because one of the most messianic psalms, the one that is quoted in the New Testament and given that stamp of added authority, quotes the end of this 102nd psalm, and it sounds like Hebrews 13:8. I said, O my God, of old hast thou laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of thy hands. They shall perish, but thou shalt endure. Yea, all of them shall wax old like a garment. Now it is the book of Hebrews in earlier chapters, in comparing Jesus to angels, that pulls out of this psalm the relationship he has to creation, and literally says he'll lay it aside like an old garment and prepare new. All of them, heaven, earth, shall wax old like a garment, as a vesture. Shalt thou change them, and they shall be changed. But thou art the same, and thy years shall have no end. The children of thy servants shall continue. I'm looking at this psalm, as you often hear me say, the way ladies read magazines. Maybe Dr. Naramore can explain this to me. I get on airplanes, I've yet to see a woman read a magazine from front to back. They always start back and move front. I'm preaching that way tonight. This is the last verse. The children of thy servants shall continue, and their seed shall be established before thee. So I got my connection to Hebrews 13 in case I needed it. But here's where I want to concentrate. Thou shalt arise. Speaking of the Lord. Well, let's go back to the 12th verse. Thou, O Lord, shalt endure forever. That's Hebrews 13:8 again. And thy remembrance unto all generations. Thou shalt arise and have mercy upon Zion, for the time to favor her, yea, the set time is come. For thy servants take pleasure in her stones and favor the dust thereof. I'd like you to change that word for, and you can check me any commentary you want, because for has that meaning in the 14th verse. But more literally it's translated, because thy servants take pleasure in her stones. Now why is this phrase, thou, O Lord, shalt arise, so meaningful? You never heard misery worse than the first 11 verses of this chapter. And to all those who listen across the nation, who miss the Monday through Saturday agony of rebuilding this work of faith that's the pioneer in Christian television, very few people who listen to us around the nation are aware we still, this church, owns what is still the largest completely religious television network in the world today. This 30-some-year-old church was the pioneer. They got the FM station, 99.5 here in Los Angeles, when they were still branding 100,000-watt stations. You can't do that anymore in a metropolitan area. They give 25,000-watt, that's it. Many of those who are leading voices in religious broadcasting today got their training here. And yet, as I begin the fifth year, which I hope is going to combine the meaning of two numbers, my fifth year as pastor, five is the number of grace. Unmerited favor. Not because we deserve it, but we've been as faithful as we can as a people to build up God's work. I'm praying that 1980 will be what the number 8 means, a new beginning because of His grace. And I really do want the thousands that have come to love this work because the Word of God has been preached for some years now in some of the places with no mention of these facts, to know that 4 years plus a few months, November 1, 75, this work was within 1 or 2 weeks of annihilation, or the beginnings thereof. And God has resurrected it because a people have qualified for what I'm going to focus on in this chapter tonight. But we sure qualified in the misery part. Hear my prayer, O Lord. Let's just lay it in front of us. And let my cry come unto Thee. Because there may be some miserable ones listening tonight. Hide not Thy face from me in the day when I'm in trouble. Incline thine ear unto me. In the day when I call, answer me speedily. And listen to the desolation of these descriptions. For my days are consumed like smoke. You know, I felt that way. There are times I believe I've been here throughout eternity. These last 4 years and the problems we've faced together. But there are other times it just goes by like this. My days are consumed like smoke. My bones are burned as in hearth. My heart is smitten and withered like grass, so that I forget to eat my bread. By reason of the voice of my groaning, my bones cleave to my skin. You know, I'm really glad the Bible describes the times His saints, God's saints, that is, were in misery. Otherwise, I couldn't identify with it. They're going to get out of it. We already read the end of the book just a moment ago. But this is where they started. I'm like a pelican of the wilderness. I'm like an owl of the desert. I watch and am as a sparrow alone upon the housetop. Mine enemies reproach me all the day. You know that feeling? And they that are mad against me are sworn against me. For I have eaten ashes like bread and mingled my drink with weeping because of thine indignation and thy wrath, for thou hast lifted me up and cast me down. One of the first things I did when I came to this church is say, there are two spiritual needs the church faces, lots more important than the business problems. And one of those needs is a return to faith. This church is called Faith Center. The network's called Faith Broadcasting Network. The call letters of the radio station and Channel 30 here in Los Angeles, the King's Herald of Faith, the call letters of the station in San Francisco, Channel 38, the King's Voice of Faith. I said, we ought to change the name, call it Fear Center, the King's Herald of Fear, and the King's Voice of Fear, Fear Broadcasting Network. Well, let's get back to faith. I took that as the fundamental focus I had to lay hold of when I came to this church. The other one we don't need to talk about tonight, but fear had taken over because of consequences that grew out of action that was a departure from faith. This church that was known around the world for faith started borrowing money. Now, there are people who borrow, but not the way this church borrowed. And as long as I'm pastor, this church is not going to borrow anymore when the debt's paid. But $3.5 million was owed in 30-day revocable trust and had $19,000 cash to pay it in November 1975. That's how close the work was to annihilation. And I was not called here first as a minister of faith. I was asked to come down as a business consultant to help them find a loan, which I think is kind of ironic because that's how I came, how God changed things. And I'm pastor, and faith has started deliverance again. But we were under, and I've openly looked at the cameras and said, Faith Center has paid its dues. We've done our penance. We've told the world we shouldn't have gotten off the way of faith, and what might be all right for someone else was not right for this church. We've come back to faith. We have openly exposed the problems that preceded. We have done our penance, I repeat, it's time to lift up our head and look unto the Lord and seek deliverance, which is, I'm hoping, round the bend or in process already. But I sure know this feeling. My days are like a shadow that declineth, and I am withered like grass. Now, what's the answer? Thou, O Lord, for 4 years I've preached here and said rather consistently, If we do not make it, we're to blame. Because all the way of faith requires is the available servant that will grab hold of God's Word and hang on, no matter what, till death if necessary. And as long as we got a grip on God's promise, God will never fail us. So if we fail and the work is not resurrected, we're to blame because we lost heart and let go. If we succeed and make it through 1980, 81, 82, and the debt is paid and the scar is removed off this church, and it rises strong and tall again as a leader in Christian broadcasting, then God gets all the credit. We get the blame if we let go. He gets the credit when we make it. Because only the Lord can work this miracle. I'm going into the last week of December 1979. My guess is I've still got $175,000 to raise this week to reach our budget of $300,000 for December. Only God keeping us strong can enable us to carry out the hanging in there task, that is the faith that strikes the linkage that enables God to do His work. God's got to deliver us, but we have to be the available instruments. God is the answer. That's the first thing I want to point out. In that misery, Thou, O Lord, shall endure forever, though it appears we're going to be wiped out. Thy remembrance unto all generations, Thou shalt arise. Now I want to engage in a little talk-back exercise tonight. We've been saying things all through 79. You want to say it again with me? We made it through 1979. We started saying that in the past tense in January. Why? I preached a sermon going into 1979 where David, out of one of his despairing experiences, got his eyes on God and was so lifted up into God that he closed the psalm, putting the future in the past tense. And I said, let's do it. And we started putting it in the past tense. We aren't through 79 yet. That's why the devil really wants us to fail our budget this month. But I'm going to have you say it again. We made it through 1979. How about 80? We started about December 1st. That's a month early, so we could practice. We made it through 1980. How are we going to make it? Thou shalt arise. Come on, let's say it. Thou shalt arise. And, come on, have mercy upon Faith Center. It says there's Zion. I'm part of the new Zion. And I've preached enough on these Psalms. You ought to have that figured out. There's going to be a real Zion in a real place one of these days. But the spiritual Zion includes this church. I have the Nehemiah syndrome. When I saw this church in trouble, it's Christ's body. And when I was asked, would I do what I could? I couldn't say yes. Only the Lord could give me that assignment. But I sure didn't have the privilege to say no. I had to be available. And I believe the Lord's the Lord of the harvest. He doesn't rob one vineyard to populate another one. And the need is not the call. And I do not believe every Christian in the world is assigned to Faith Center. But I believe the steps of a good man are ordered to the Lord, and those who acknowledge the Lord, He directs their paths, And if He's directed your path to this network and you've been listening day after day, night after night, and receiving God's Word, He did it for a reason. And you cannot just out of hand say, no, I shouldn't participate. God's body had a scar on it. I don't even have to be super spiritual. There is not a church or a ministry anywhere in California, and certainly anywhere in the three cities where this network reaches, that failure could do as much far-reaching damage to the church, and restoration could do more good to prove the reality and the power of faith than this work. It cannot be ignored. That's why the devil attacked it so strongly. Had this church gone down, you know, there are those that feel the cure is worse than the sickness. They see me fighting to get the walls of faith up. Well, I'm nothing to what would have happened in impact negative on every church if Faith Center had gone under. It's not going under. We made it through 1980. Why? Say it, thou shalt arise and have mercy upon Faith Center. Is it just automatic? Can we say because 1980 rolled around, that's the time of mercy? God's problem from the beginning of His dealing with men is the problem of cooperation. Don't ask me why. I have the same answer that the writer of the Hebrews had when he was amazed and wondered at the fact that God didn't bend down and restore fallen angels, but He did bend down and restore man. I don't know why that God has limited Himself to do His work through us. It was a very personal experience one night in Oregon when it dawned on me that God could do His work without me, that He had angels at His beck and call who could affect any city I was going to with a great deal more effectiveness than I had. But God is covenanted to do His work through us. God, who is a covenant-making God, who when He speaks a thing forever, O Lord, Thy word is settled in heaven, who is not a man that He should lie, when He speaks He'll do what He says He'll make good, God has determined to accomplish certain of His purposes through us. That's about as strange as giving brains out, Doc. Just as strange. Why He would do His work through us. That's His plan. He's not going to arise just simply because some prophet had a vision after a Shrine Auditorium service. There are conditions, and there's a set time. For the time to favor her, yea, the set time is come. I'm going to make you say that with me too, because I want it to settle in. For the time to favor her, say it with me, for the time to favor her, yea, the set time. Underline those three words. The set time. God has set a time. The time to favor her is already set. I don't mind telling you, my alarm went off three or four times and God wasn't ready yet. I've set my clock counting down several times and told the Lord He ought to rewind His clock and set the alarm with me. You all know I started preaching about 2 years ago. That was before Antichrist moved in. The real force behind some of these governmental battles. And I thought that we had the financial problem so solved that we were at the brink of victory. And I started preaching a series of messages out of God's book, great victories in God's book, so we'd know how to act in victory and not have it sneak up on us, having come from misery and defeat. Well, God's alarm didn't go off. His time was different or differently set than mine. But I still contend when that time comes, man, he'll get this job done so quickly. We'll wonder what in the world was the matter with our head that we thought it was going to go on forever. The time to favor her, yea, the set time has come. The set time. I've said two things. God's the answer, and He's got a time. Now, there are lots of people who turn loose before His time comes. He's got a time. What is the time? In this verse, it's clear. Why I said, change that word for, and then I'm finished tonight. The 14th verse should read, because thy servants take pleasure in her stones and favor the dust thereof. You say, what in the world does that mean? Some of you already know, but my job's demystifying spiritual things. You know when the set time is triggered? When God's people, thy servants, why do you think I've been coming down so hard on the accept Jesus philosophy, the believe and receive humanization of the gospel? In the New Testament, salvation is synonymous with lordship. We're His servants. Christianity is not a different plate on the smorgasbord of lifestyle competing based upon what it does to earthly taste buds. It is either the way or no way at all. Jesus bought us with a price, be not the servants of men, and lordship is synonymous with salvation. And when thy servants, the Lord's servants, take pleasure in her stones. I've been misunderstood by a lot of people as I preached on what I call the Nehemiah syndrome. And I repeat what I said earlier. I don't think any Christian who claims that his steps are ordered to the Lord and sits in front of this television or listens to the radio can exempt himself from this message. Nehemiah was 4 months' journey from God's house and God's city, and all he heard was the news that the walls were down. He didn't make a big hoop-de-do about it. He started fasting and praying for 4 months until the king, at risk to his natural life, to appear in the king's presence, sad of countenance, until the king noticed him and said, what ails you? And an old pragmatic, practical Nehemiah made his prayer to God and asked the king and made himself available. And God pulled the trigger on the availability and sent him back to Jerusalem, 4 months' journey across the wilderness, to build up the stones, to get into that dust, literally, to take pleasure in the stones of Zion and favor the dust thereof. Who wouldn't get excited about the golden gate swung open? Who wouldn't get excited with all the color and liturgy and happenings of a temple fully built and a city functioning as God planned it. It's a rare kind of servant that bleeds as God bleeds, with stones and dust, because it's a scar on God's promises, God's plan, God's program. I never preach to a congregation without putting myself in front. Probably too many times in the last 4 years, I've wished the battle was over. I wish that the stones were up and the dust was swept away. I've been asking God if the set time is delayed until I can reach a stage that I take pleasure in the stones and the dust and the job of building it. I think there are lots of people listening to me. They keep waiting. Oh, we'll just wait, you know. If God's for him, he'll make it. Well, what kind of spiritual discernment does it take to get on a bandwagon? You create enough excitement with a bandwagon and an orangutan will jump on it. It doesn't take spiritual discernment to get on a parade wagon. It takes a rare breed to take pleasure in the stones thereof and favor the dust thereof. If you have not the Spirit of Christ, you're none of His. And the Corinthian letter says, if we have His Spirit, we have the mind of Christ. I've learned about as much as anybody else since I've been here. But I know one thing, the message I came preaching is the right one. This is God's work. All through God's book, I don't understand this law. God looks out for me. I look out for His work. Before Zechariah, that saw the visions of God's people as myrtle trees blooming and growing in bottom lands, who could give the promise to the builder that the mountains would go flat in front of him. Before he ever unfolded the visions, he says, turn to God and He'll turn to you. We look out for God's work. He looks out for us. Best exchange we've ever made. I repeat, I don't think every Christian in the world has from the Lord of the harvest the assignment to build up faith centers and faith networks, walls of faith again. But they're scarred. And God's work was in danger of going completely under and shaking the whole church world. And if you have benefited from this ministry, you cannot exempt